Save big on brunch for mom, all in the Kroger app. Get half gallons of delicious Kroger milk for $1.29 each. Then get flavorful Tyson Natural Boneless Chicken Breasts for $2.49 a pound, all with your card and a digital coupon. Shop these deals at your local Kroger today. Or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Hello and welcome to Rain Stop Play. We are here off the back of the suspension of the IPL and a lot of other cricketing news, so plenty to get through this week. Thank you for joining us. It's just me and Zach today. How are you, Zach? We are just coming off the back of breaking news. There's a triple game week in fantasy football, so that's shaken us up both a little bit. I know this is a cricket podcast. And, of course, everyone wants to hear if you play cricket this week and how you got on. So please do enlighten us.
So I didn't get picked for the team this week, but and then they went on lost. So, you know, that's if they'd have picked me, maybe they'd have won. But I played in an intra-squad friendly on Saturday morning, 10 a.m. So it was very early, and I went for a few drinks on Friday. So I was a bit ropey, and I only found out I was opening the bowling about 2 minutes before. So the first couple overs were a bit tough, and I went for a few runs. Didn't take any wickets, went for a few runs. It wasn't great. It was just like a T20 game. And then got put into bat three, which is very high. And, the openers saw off the first few overs. And then I came in and faced off a few balls, faced a lot of wides. Because it was just an intra-squad game. It's kind of all the players who don't often get a game. So, and some of them don't bowl that much. So they were bowling and
struggling. And you're left-handed, you're left-handed, aren't you? Because I'm left-handed as well. And I found whenever I went in the nets, everything would be flying past your legs, wouldn't it, for at least the first 10 minutes.
Oh, exactly. At our net session, there's so many people like, you don't get 10 minutes. I probably can hit three balls and they're like, right, your time's up. But yes, we had that as well. So I faced a lot of balls that I couldn't hit. We were playing free hits though. So I got a free hit at one point, and it's a really long boundary and the really long grass. So I hit it over mid on. And it looked like it was sailing away.
Yeah.
But it just hit the ground and plugged and got two runs. It was such a beautiful shot. I was well annoyed. And then two balls later, I go back to one that's a bit short. And it doesn't bounce that much.
That's like your fault, that is. That's the Sky Sports pundits would have picked that out. I'm sure 2 weeks ago you went back to one that didn't get up. I'm sure this is a common fault in your batting.
This is true, but it's also the fact that the pitch is, it just doesn't bounce. Like it was
really
short.
Do not go back.
All right. It was really short and it hit me halfway up the thigh on my back leg, and I was given out LBW. So halfway up my thigh, unless it's going to drop down again, which it might have been dropping down again, to be fair. It might have been on the way down. But still, it's quite high for me. For me being that height.
Did you give it one of them where you just sort of stood there and kind of hinted to the umpire that it hit me like, you know, above my pad there, just sort of stand there and.
They kind of only half appealed, almost like they were joking. And then the umpire gave me out and I kind of like looked down, looked at the umpire and was a bit like, looked back at the stumps and then walked off. And then as I was walking off, square leg was like, I was square on then. It looked very high on you. And I was like, brilliant. Thanks, mate.
Well, it's not bad. And I mean, if any listeners are going to be playing against you in the near future across this summer, bowl a little bit short on a pitch that isn't giving enough bounce and you'll either bowl Zach or you'll get out to a dodgy LBW. You're giving away your weaknesses here.
Well, the thing was, is that it was only a T20 game and we needed to up the run rate. So this ball, I probably would have defended if it had been in a 40-over game.
Okay.
But I kind of needed to swing for it. I have been, you know, hours since shadow batting and practicing the shot I should have played.
Yeah, good.
Rather than just I probably played quite a big hoik across the line.
Yeah. we got to get some footage of that for listeners, I think, just so they can really see it, you know, really take it in. But thank you for that, Zach. Yeah. And I look forward to next week's tale of village cricket. Let's go on to real cricket now. Let's chat about county cricket, Zach. Another awesome week. And obviously the news that it will be covered on Sky Sports this week. It's the fifth? Will be the start of the fifth round of games? that come on Sky this week, Middlesex versus Gloucestershire. But Zach, chat to me about some of the sort of highlights from last week's results, because there were some unbelievable games.
Yeah, well, I mean, it's great news it's going to be on Sky, and it is going to kind of appeal to a wider audience, because people are going to turn on their TVs and be like, oh yeah, no IPL, but oh, I see that game's on. It is going to appeal to more people than the live stream does. I'm just hoping it doesn't mean they don't have a live stream for the game, because then that kind of almost defeats the point of them getting extra people involved in it. But yeah, we had some really good games this week, and I mean, I still wish they just did on Sky Sports a kind of a there's been a wicket, but who for, and they show the kind of...
Wouldn't that be class if they did like a, I don't know where they'd put the time, probably on Sky Sports Cricket, you know, what, 6 hours a day? And yeah, then like when there's a bit of a lull, they just show on full screen like whatever the best game is at the minute on the stream, and then they'll cut almost like Red Zone. Have you seen Red Zone for NFL? Red Zone for cricket is definitely something we could pitch to Sky.
I've heard murmurings about it on Twitter, and I think one day when this pod is big enough, we'll just be able to fund it ourselves.
Well, I'm thinking that, mate. Yeah. We'll get all the gear there ourselves.
Yeah, so that'll be good. But yeah, so we had some really good games. Some very one-sided games, including Durham beating Warwickshire by an innings and 127 runs, including a few wickets for Mark Wood, which was nice. And Surrey beating, you know, early high flyers Hampshire by an innings and 289 runs, including a 215 from Hashim Amla and another century for Ollie Pope, who is surely, like, you know, solidifying his spot in the England team at the moment with his brilliant form. Because I feel like there are a few questions after India. He didn't play that well. Dan Lawrence played, you know, relatively well. It kind of seemed like they're not necessarily at similar levels. I think Pope is certainly better. But it kind of, if Pope had not been that good in these opening games and Lawrence had scored a stack of runs, I think that could have put him above him. But Pope has really solidified his place. He's kind of the best in form out of anyone who, you know, it's played for England, because no one's really doing much. Roy Burns has scored a few runs. Sibley's injured, but will hope, I think, is back this week. Root's been hit and miss, scored a century and then scored a few, but then was resting last week. And with the IPL players coming back, it could mean they get a game of county championship cricket before the New Zealand Test game, which is interesting and will mean they're available, presumably, for that. But yeah, I'm sure we'll come on to that in a bit. Other than that, we had a really interesting game between Gloucestershire and Leicestershire. Gloucestershire was set 348 to win with like 75 overs left in the game or something. I think it was 78 overs. And it was really looking like the thing is, there is a case of Bristol pitches seem to kind of just flatten out. And sometimes on the last day, rather than, you know, doing a bit for a spinner, they'll just be flat and no one will be able to take any wickets. So Gloucestershire did manage to knock off 348 in 70 overs in turn what looked like they were either going to lose or a draw into a win, which is massive for them, and they're top of the group, which also includes Somerset, obviously my team, who also won again from a losing position. They came back from a 90 run deficit on first innings to skittle Middlesex for 117 and then chase it down with four wickets to spare, which included a 41 not out from original pod favourite Lewis Goldsworthy, who made his first-class debut and is someone I have called for a long time.
This is your guy, isn't it? This is your guy. And we've got, you know, listeners, watch out for this kid, because we've got our eyes on him, because Zach's called him. And if he goes big, it's basically us. That's where we're at.
Basically, yeah. So I called him out last year because he span really well for... I don't know. He bowled really well.
Bold spin. No one's ever said that. No. Come on, Zach. The serious cricket podcast. And he span really well. It's called bold, mate. Bowling and batting.
He bowled spin really nicely at the Under-19s World Cup at the beginning of last year. And then I think one of the early pods I called him out because he could be a potential future to the England spin problem. But actually in this game, he didn't bowl a ball.
More of a batsman than his fault.
He's been scoring loads of runs for the twos and has finally had his chance. And yeah, the other kind of really close game was Yorkshire winning by one run, which included...
Crazy. Absolutely crazy scene that was.
A 50 for other pod favourite, Don Bess, in their first pitch. Top scoring across the game. He then didn't take that many wickets. One in the first innings and then none in the second. But didn't have to bowl that much, I think... you know, the Pacers did the job, including David Willey taking a few wickets.
Remember David Willey? That's a shout out. We got to mention Nottinghamshire as well. They won their first for 22 games. I think it was their 23rd. comprehensively against Derbyshire as well, which is a bit of a local derby. Stuart Broad's been in the wickets there. So that's good for them, isn't it, Zach? I kind of, when we did our county preview, I couldn't believe they hadn't won for that period of time. And they finally broke their duck, so that's very good. And yeah, it was definitely those big innings wins from Durham and Surrey that were the shockers. Like, Warwickshire and Hampshire both been going so well. And then on the Thursday last week, Warwickshire all out for 87, Hampshire all out for 92 was a little bit crazy. And I would like to chat about Sussex briefly, who are giving me so much hope and then kind of crushing it in that third innings. As you mentioned before we came on, Zach, against both Roses sides, they've had a good first innings, come into the second innings with a lead, then got bowled out for very little and lost the game. They lost to Lancashire by 5 wickets. This time around with Keaton Jennings in the runs. Again, another bit of a throwback name. But let's chat about how the tables are now. Now we've played 4. We've got these 3 groups of 6. And let's just look at Group A, because this is crazy. All played 4 games. Warwickshire first with 54 points. Durham second with 53 points. Worcestershire, who've not won a game but have drawn 4 out of 4 games, on 52 points. And then Notts, who, as I just mentioned, won last week on 51 points. And then Essex on 49, Derbyshire on 40. The whole division's split by 14 points. Isn't that crazy? I like this. All the divisions are pretty close right now.
Yeah, it's so interesting, and it's keeping it tight. It kind of means that no team is out of it. Derbyshire are 14 points away from the top. Like, that is, you know, you have a win. A win is 16 points plus the bonus points you get. They could, if they win this week, they could go top. I mean, they probably couldn't.
Quite a lot of results.
Other teams getting points, but, you know, somehow every other team would get 0 points. They could go top.
They could
put themselves massively back in the mix, you know, within 5 points of the top if they win and results go their way. Like, it's so close. And it's mad to see Essex down there in 5th, having, you know, drawn a couple games. They've, you know, Worcestershire, they may have not won a game, but they've played Essex twice already, because this last week's games were a repeat of the first week. So they've drawn twice against Essex. And if you'd have told them at the beginning of the season, 4 games in, you're going to have drawn twice against, you know, the best team in the country, I think they'd be pretty happy with that. You know, hopefully they can push on and get some more wins. They've got a lot of batting bonus points. I think they've got more batting bonus points than anyone else in the country.
Yeah, they've got 13 at the minute, because I'm guessing they've been batting and batting and batting, right? They've had some outrageous scores, I think, in the games they've been in.
Well, Jake Libby's been brilliant, you know, for a few.
Yeah.
He was brilliant for them last year, and he was really good again. He kind of held on and got a 50 not out off of, I think, a hell of a lot of balls in the kind of last day when against Essex, when Essex had hit 561 and declared, and, you know, obviously Alex Cook scored another century. He's still going so well.
Nature is healing. I saw someone tweet when he got his turn this week. That was nice. And then one to sort of earmark is, if you look at Group 3, Lancashire and Yorkshire both 1-3, drawn 1. Lancashire 6 points ahead because of far more batting points, because Yorkshire batted terribly. But the Roses clash starts at the end of this month.
29th of May, yeah?
There we go. It's annoyingly close to the start of the England Test match. So I imagine they won't have any of their England players, frustratingly. But still, depending on how the next couple of games go, that's a well-poised game. Those guys are just sort of peeking ahead at the top of Group 3 at the minute. And then top of Group 2 is Gloucestershire, 14 points ahead of Somerset. But obviously Hampshire and Surrey, and probably Middlesex, are well in that mix. I'd argue Leicestershire at the bottom of Group 2 and Kent at the bottom of Group 3 look a little bit cut adrift at the minute. But as we said, lots of points up for grabs, even for a draw. Plenty of games left. So that's your little county roundup. I'm really enjoying it this year, Zach. I'm not sure if it's because I'm doing a podcast on it or whether this format's working a bit better. Who knows? But that was very good.
I think the format's working a bit better because, you know, I mean, not to sound a bit like a Premier League football fan, but in years gone by, I wouldn't have bothered with Division 2 when Somerset in it, because it's like, well, why would I bother with Division 2? All the good teams are in Division 1. But because there's, you know, there's these little teams turning over bigger teams, and it's all close, it makes it more interesting. And, you know, like you say, to be 4 games in and only 2 teams really, you know, they're not completely out of it, but looking like they're not going to be involved in kind of an end, like the race towards Division 1, which it will be for the second, you know, the last bit of the season. Yeah, I'm not going to explain it again, but yeah.
Never again.
You get it now.
But I think you see teams like Durham who are sat second, you know, even Gloucestershire to an extent, who I know got promoted last year, but they can beat these big teams. There's no need for a Division 2 per se. Like, that is the it, it's Well, yeah, I was some of my eyebrows at that, but I think it's proof that we don't need it necessarily, and I hope this sticks around. Right, so let's get stuck into the main story of the week, which is, of course, the IPL being suspended due to a COVID outbreak within the bubble. I listened back to our pod last week, actually, and there was some, I thought we were actually quite insightful there, and we said it's all going well so far, providing the bubble doesn't get breached. And unfortunately, that happened this week. At the start of the week, it was Varun Chakravarty and Sandeep Warrior of KKR who contracted it. A few games were suspended initially, and then the whole tournament was suspended. Not surprised, Zach. I mean, we spoke last week about it and we said as long as that bubble was like impenetrable, we'll be fine, and it's been penetrated. So that's pretty much the end of that, isn't it? And I just can't see it coming back. I can't see where they're going to fit it into the schedule, whether there's actually that much hunger to have it, because I think this might have been quite traumatic for a lot of people, and whether they just need to null and void the whole thing and we come back again next year.
Yeah, I mean, it's going to be really tough. Like, we've talked a lot on this podcast about England having to rest and rotate and move players around because there's not enough space in the calendar and there's a lot of games going on this year. So them fitting in another time to do the IPL is looking unlikely, especially with the World Cup going on later in the year, the T20 World Cup going on later in the year, which was when they did the IPL last year. And yeah, I think they've done half it. And with, they originally said, I think they wanted to just start again in a week in Mumbai. Which,
I mean, that's absolutely outrageous. And we'll come on to how the players are getting home and if they can get home. And the fact they're all going back to their respective countries, the overseas players, to me suggests that this thing's done and dusted.
Oh, me too. Yeah. First, I was kind of thinking, oh, if they're going to try and do it again in a week, you know, they're going to push for this. They're going to really want it. So they will probably do it. And then you hear about, you know, like you say, some of the England players are already at home, the Australian players and their struggles to get home. But they're all coming home. They're not. They could do the IPL with just the local players, but I don't think they would because of the kind of idea of the brand of the IPL as being, you know, it's the best tournament in the world. We have all of the world's best players. So
yeah, spot on.
To do kind of an IPL without that would feel a bit like it's gone against the message that's been shoved down our throats for the last 14 years.
No, you're spot on, I think. It would just be Indian domestic cricket then. It wouldn't be the Indian Premier League as such. So Chakravarty got it. He was in what was called a green channel and he went for a scan. And that's all part of the protocol. And he obviously picked it up either between getting the scan or while getting the scan. And then it's kind of been a little domino effect from there. So Saha of the Sunrisers Hyderabad tested positive. Amit Mishra from the Delhi Capitals. Mike Hussey, the coach, former cricketer himself, tested positive today. So it's just going to be a domino effect, isn't it? I suspect we'll see more and more of these come through as the week goes on as well. And there's a fascinating article in ESPN Quick Info about why this has gone so wrong. Obviously, they can't control what's going on in India, but there have been a few key things as to why it was so successful in the UAE in the autumn of last year and where it's gone wrong this year. And it's interesting, it's all coincided with the bubbles moving, Zach. And we spoke about this, and I don't think any of us quite understood why they were doing it when we previewed the whole IPL. I'd argue that's probably some of the fault. And also, you know, why wasn't it in the UAE again? Obviously, this COVID outbreak's come fairly suddenly and fairly viciously. But surely they could have the BCCI could have seen this coming and just left it in there for one more year. Maybe there were hopeful crowds coming in, so wanted it in India. But it's costing them their tournament ultimately.
Yeah, I think originally that was, I think Will in the preview pod said about this moving bubbles thing and made it clear that he said, well, you know, which he was completely right on now, which annoyingly he seems to often be, but you know.
He is, isn't he? Yeah. And yeah. He's not here this week and we can just bitch about him a little bit for now.
Yeah, so he called it out clearly saying the moving bubbles is going to be difficult. You know, it's going to cause problems. It's probably going to lead to the bubble bursting, which it very much has done. And I think with the point about them having it in the UAE, I think you're completely right with them wanting to have crowds in, because obviously if you think back to the T20 series and the T20I series with England India and the Test series, there was crowds, so they had crowds in grounds not that long ago. And I listened to a Guardian podcast about the handling of the pandemic in India, and it talked about the kind of handling of it and them accepting and them allowing to have massive crowds in grounds when it was kind of viewed that India had beaten coronavirus, even though all of the senior scientists were not saying that. You know, they weren't saying it was beaten, but it was kind of viewed that it was done, everything was done. Which, you know, I can. There's definitely parallels with here last summer as well. Like, kind of there's been that atmosphere around. I think, you know, it kind of just comes back to everyone wanting it to be done. Everyone wants it to be over, but it seems to, you know, keep coming back. And it does make you think they should have just done it in the UAE. It worked so well. They had the three stadiums, which gave them the variation. It wasn't just, you know, there was Sharjah that was just tiny and everyone, you know, and then got slower though. So then there were lower scores. So that kind of gave it the variation, but it was so secure. And also the thing with the UAE is their vaccine rate is so high, so their case rate is pretty low at the moment, so it would have worked. And that's kind of one of the reasons I think it's not worked as well, the bubbles, as well as the moving around, is the fact that there's just so much more coronavirus around the bubbles than there was in the UAE, that no matter how tight the bubble is, there's always going to be some, you know, like these green channels, like you're going into hospitals which are, you know, overrun with coronavirus patients and things like, so there's always a risk.
And it's easy for us to say that with hindsight now, isn't it? Or just do it in the UAE when, as you said, there was 80,000 people in that test match. That in itself was probably horribly wrong and is what sparked this terrible outbreak in India at the minute. But you can see the logic behind them having it in India again, because in their head, everything was getting okay, which it wasn't. And as you said, in the UAE, all the stadiums were in driving distance of each other, so they weren't having to fly or go through airports. The bubbles were a lot more secure traveling from ground to ground, whereas these sort of bubbles in India, there's been flying involved. And clearly this first change of venues for a lot of the teams has sort of been the main issue. As for the overseas players, eight of the 11 England players, who were at the IPL are now back in the UK, and they'll be self-isolating in a hotel. Morgan, Jordan and Milan, who were at KKR and Kings 11, oh, excuse me, Punjab Kings.
Ding, 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 pound in the
Damn.
Jar.
Oh, there's always one. I think they're having to wait a bit longer because they were in the main sort of infected bubble, as it were. So good job those lads are back. And like you said, they might be available for a bit of county stuff, but I imagine they'll just want to rest after what must have been a strange couple of months. The New Zealand players is an interesting one. So a big group of them having to wait until sort of May the 10th or 11th, when the UK's government rules change, to come straight to the UK because they've got the World Test Championship final and a few other their players are playing in the Blast and stuff like that. So they're going to be based in the UK for a while. And then the Australians, they're struggling because of Australia's rules of people coming in from India. So there might be a chartered flight coming out of Sri Lanka or the Maldives, apparently. Obviously, we spoke about last week, a few of them went home ahead of this and clearly saw this before we did. So chaos, basically, Zach, isn't it? Absolute chaos. And it's this stuff, it's this sort of panically going home that just has to mean this thing's unfortunately over. And what we watched was all pretty pointless, fun as it was.
Yeah. I mean, it was all pretty pointless. Just one of those players who's playing in the Blast is Devon Conway.
Sorry, we didn't mention the Somerset thing. I'm sorry, Zach. Go on. That's a great signing. That is a great signing.
It is a great signing. His record's brilliant. He's going to be available for 9 of the group games and 2 county championship games, which would be interesting because Somerset's top order frailties have been well documented on this podcast. But yeah, I mean, it makes me think it's the end of the IPL. There's no IPL when all of these players are gone. And it's interesting you mentioned about those few Australian players who left early. And it, you know, at the time we thought their decision was vindicated because they weren't getting many games. And now their decision is certainly vindicated.
Well, that's exactly what I thought. I was like, they're not getting many games. Probably makes sense. But so far it's been fine. And well, you know, as you said, hindsight, they've done a very good job. So yeah, unfortunately that is over for now, and they've said postponed indefinitely, and I imagine that indefinitely will exist until IPL 2022 comes about in April. Whispers of like September maybe, but obviously with the World Test Championship final in June, some point in June, isn't it? There it is, mid-June. We've not got much time for the India players to get over and get an IPL in, and then obviously India tour England to play a few test matches and the rest, so it's too packed a schedule. I've said the cricket was pointless, but there is some cricket to talk about, Zach, and we've got about half an hour left, so we might as well, mightn't we? That's what we're sat here to do. And there were some really good games, which kind of made this hurt even more, the postponement. I was gutted when it came through. Because there have been some awesome games in the last couple of days. I don't know where you want to start. Should we talk about a couple of the games as opposed to the teams this week? Because for me, the CSK Mumbai game on Saturday was just beautiful, finesse T20 cricket. It was the IPL packaged up into a perfect little four-hour bundle with Kieran Pollard putting a little cherry on top of the cake, because that was just an unbelievable game.
Yeah, it was an unbelievable game, and I felt really vindicated by it, because I've been calling out Chennai's death bowling as being their weakness. Yes. And as being terrible throughout the tournament. So I felt really vindicated. And also, I love Kieran Pollard. So I was really enjoying him, you know, finishing it off. And it was amazing, wasn't it? I mean, Faf du Plessis, brilliant form. You know, yeah. His fourth 50 in a row.
So
which
quietly
is crazy.
He goes about his business as well, doesn't he? But yeah. He's so good at the top of the order there.
I mean, and then Moeen got another 50. Well, no, got a 50, which is really nice. And Raidu finally scored some runs. But yeah, that, and then that innings from Pollard, they were 84 for 3 off of the halfway mark.
And just the way he strikes the ball, I was in awe of it. You very rarely see those sort of knocks where he just had so much. Like, we know he's got the power, but the timing was there this week as well. And you just feared for any bowler coming in that it was going to go the distance. And most of the time it did. Even one off like a thick inside edge went for 6 over like long on. And you're just thinking, how would you bowl to that guy? And then Curran did. There was a great over Curran bowled to Pollard. I think it was maybe the 17th over when the game was in the balance. He finished with 3 for 34 against, I mean, some of the figures. Lungi Ngidi, none for 62. Tackle struggled, didn't he?
As he has done
for the whole tournament. I was like, I remember, yeah. We spoke about him in the two pods. You've caught of highlighted his week is his flaws so far, and I was like, come on, this could get some form for the rest of the tournament that I thought was going to go on. And then 1 for 56 for him. He was really struggling, and I think despite the fact they lost this game and they're looking fairly good, I think you're right, Zach, and you alluded to it last pod that their death bowling was going to mean they were going to struggle. They should, like, they probably would have gotten the top 4, but that bowling attack was never going to win an IPL, was it really?
No, because if you look at Ngidi's a good bowler. He's not a bad bowler. He's not, you know, in the South Africa attack with Rabada and Nokia, he's a very good third seamer in that attack. Exactly. But he's not a good enough death bowler, because in that attack he doesn't need to be a death bowler specifically, really, you know. So he's not good enough as a leading death bowler, because it was Ngidi who got pumped around by Jofra Archer for that. You know, it was when he scored 4 sixes off of like one legal delivery last year or something silly like that.
That was bad.
So yeah, he doesn't seem to have it in the big moments, which is, you know, it's not something, you know, it's one of those things you can't really quantify, but he doesn't seem to be able to pull it off in the big moments. So yeah, that's a worry. And you know, Sam Curran's not a death bowler. Deepak Chahar's been good for them this year. He's still like, but he's good at the start. If the ball's moving around, they've probably got the best opening bowlers. If it's moving around a bit, in Sam Curran and Deepak Chahar, both really good if the ball's moving around a little bit, which it never is for very long, if it is at all. So yeah, if they were playing, you know, 4-day cricket in England, maybe both of them would be pretty good, but unfortunately they're not.
Another cracking game, and we were sort of somewhat live reacting to this on the last pod. We were recording as this game was going on, and we were like, Delhi are out of this, Delhi are dead. It was when Rishabh Pant was like striking about 80, and so was Stoinis. And DC still lost. They lost by a run. But Shimon Hetmeyer, who I can't remember last time he went off like this, 53 or 25 balls, nearly got them over the line. Rishabh Pant was there at the end, 58 or 48, which is very uncharacteristic for him. That was another really good game. There have been a couple that really went down to the wire, and especially RCB versus Delhi. So this could be some people's final, sort of pre-final, the way they were going. So that was another really good game that kind of came out of nowhere as well.
Yeah, and I think if you look at Delhi, like, Delhi have been really good recently, but this game was just, I don't know, I think they've generally been really good chasing, like the last two games against, you know, they've been against poor opposition, but they've made it look so easy to chase down totals that are probably slightly under par, but it's almost been boring to watch the other two games they played in the last week, because within the first three overs, it was like, oh, Delhi are going to chase this. Within that game they played against KKR, where Prithvi Shaw hit six fours in the first over, and there was a wide that very nearly went for five wides. Mm-hmm. It was, you know, and KKR struggled to 150. It was like, okay, game's over. But yeah, this one, it's almost like, I know Will would hate me to say this, and he's going to be listening, I'm sure, but Pant, the captaincy seems to be almost weighing him down. Like he feels like he needs to play that innings of, you know, the innings that Steve Smith should be playing, not yes. Rishabh Pant.
It's like you get the captain's armband on, don't you? And you think, right, I've got to be here for the whole thing. And there was also a few questionable bowling changes and decisions, bowling Stoinis for one solo over as the last over is a little bit weird, a little bit uncharacteristic. And I remember you asking Will this last week or maybe 2 weeks ago. I can't remember now, but he defended Pant, but there was a slight look of resignation in his face that said to me, this isn't quite going so well. And it had been interesting to see how that played out. But I think his team was doing so well and generally it was working, you know, easy run chases against Punjab Kings and KKR that meant he was fine. If they were losing games, though, that would have been really interesting to see what they did with that captaincy situation potentially.
Yeah, it would have been interesting, especially with, you know, the kind of the leaders in that squad. And it seems like they've kind of now finally set on, they had, obviously it doesn't matter anymore, had set on Steve Smith, because Steve Smith missed a couple games. They'd been moving around there overseas, but they kind of set on Rabada, Stoinis, Hetmyer and Smith, which seems a lot of batting, especially considering how you look at their Indian batters and they've got, you know, Pant, Dhawan, Shaw, Rahane's not getting inside.
Yeah.
And then in the game against KKR, Smith played but didn't bat. And they lost three wickets. So Stoinis and Hetmyer just came in above him, which seems a bit strange. And I'd understand it if they had been chasing loads, but that was the innings where Shaw hit 82 off. He was on 50 from about 18 balls. It was so silly. But yeah, they're good. I think Delhi were good. I mean, and you know, if we were going on points per game, Delhi Capitals have won their first IPL. So can we just congratulate them? You know,
I think we should. Congratulations, Delhi Capitals. And I think more than anything, we all sort of called this, by the way. So yeah, good for us. Do you have the full points per game table for us? Is it pretty much as it sits now? I mean, they only get 2 points to win anyway, and they've all kind of won and lost a very similar amount. It was all quite congested in there, so I imagine it stayed the same.
I think it's the same. Who's played more games? Yeah, I'm going to say it's exactly the same as the table is now. So
so it's irrelevant then, like yeah. Most of this conversation. well, good for Delhi and probably the best all-round team. Another game I'd like to chat about involving my Punjab Kings. You know, I'm a huge Punjab Kings fan. And they brought in Harpreet Brar. Am I saying that right? I guess that's how it's pronounced. Anyway, he came in and I think it was his first ever IPL game, maybe his second, but took the wickets of AB de Villiers, Glenn Maxwell for Golden Duck and Virat Kohli in a pretty inspired performance from Punjab Kings, whose batting and bowling showed up on the same day to beat RCB by 340 runs. That'd have been a good win. 34 runs. And I had high hopes after this. I was like, right, maybe this is a little formula. And to see RCB slip up that badly against one of the poorer sides was really interesting.
Yeah, I mean, if you look at that RCB innings, all of the top three had strike rates of under 120. And the only one above 110 out of those is the fact that Paddy Carr hit 7 off of 6 balls. Kohli, you know, it was 35 from 34 and Paddy Carr 31 from 30. They scored a combined 73 runs from 70 of the balls out of 120 in the innings. That's not good enough, is it? They ate up more than half of the deliveries and didn't hit, you know, anywhere near enough runs. It's really not very good when you're chasing 179, which isn't the biggest total.
No, it's not threatening, is it really?
It's not, no. And, you know, you look at this, it kind of shows that what happens when AB de Villiers doesn't do what AB de Villiers does. Because he hit 3 in this and they really struggled. Like, looking at that scorecard, Maxwell got a duck and I know he has been good. And then Bishnoi took some wickets, which is nice to see. I think Sam's bowled really well in this game, though. One for 24 from his 4 overs is very good. And yeah, Jameson, I still can't work out whether Jameson's been good or not. He's kind of...
I'm exactly the same. I've watched him bowl and he's been okay. His figures have been okay. Like, he picks up a couple... He's picked up a fair few wickets. Some days he goes for 10, some days he goes for 6. I don't think he wasn't a bust. He wasn't like, oh shit, we spent way too much money on him. Neither was he like game changing. You know what I mean? He was totally in the middle. It'd be interesting to see. I don't know how the contract situation is going to work going into next year, but it'd be interesting to see if RCB keep him or someone wants to pick him up, or if this was an experiment gone wrong. I can't quite work him out still.
Yeah, well, the thing is they do often have. I feel like the thing is if he's going to do well, they need to have other bowlers who have good economy. And I suppose if he does play in the same team as Washington Sundar,
big man,
that is quite good, because he bowls, because Jameson has gone for a fair few, but has always seemed to take wickets, like you say. He took two in this game we're talking about. But, you know, he goes for a few, which is fine, because if you're in a team that has lots of, you know, economical bowlers, and I feel like Siraj can be economical, and, you know, Washington Sundar's well documented his economy.
Yeah. There's plenty of coverage on that on this podcast.
Exactly.
For Harpreet Brar, I think it's just Brar, by the way. It just feels a bit weird to say. 25 of 17 as well with the bat, and his little cheeky little three for of three of the best T20 batsmen in the world. A great day for him. One man who will be probably quite chuffed the IPL is over is Nicholas Pooran, who had just a miserable, miserable IPL. This game we're talking about here against RCB, none of three. Will alluded to it last week, I think, saying that he wishes people would stop building him up for him to come crashing down every single year. And I'm with him on that. And for Punjab Kings, he's such an important part of that middle order and an overseas player. And if he keeps underperforming like this, they're going to have to get rid pretty quickly.
Yeah, I mean, he's, you know, he then went and got, did he get a four ball duck after that in the next game? Like, it was,
I believe,
kind of,
so, yeah. I think he had four ducks in the IPL.
Yeah. Oh, he was actually dropped for the next game for Dawid Malan, who I was going to come on to, actually, because he showed exactly why, I think we said a couple of weeks ago, he is not the solution to their problem.
I missed this. You know what? What was I doing? What day was that on? Sunday. I was playing golf on Sunday. Missed this game. Malan played 26 of 26. And gets bowled back to Patel. Another Englishman getting bowled back to Patel. I'd say, well, it's a good job I didn't watch this game, otherwise I had an aneurysm. That is, mate, we've been doing this podcast for like 9 months now, whatever. And that happened. That actually, a 26 ball 26 from Milan, bowled by Patel. What's going on?
If anything sums up everything we've spoken about in the podcast for the last 9 months, it's Milan 26 balls, bowled Axar Patel.
You know what? If you're a first time listener to this podcast, don't bother with the other 40 odd episodes. Find that innings, watch it, and then rejoin us. You'll pretty much get the gist from there on in. I mean, I totally missed this game. My 99 not out. That's a shame.
Yeah. I mean, it was, you know, it was all right. They did all, but then again, it just wasn't enough runs. It was another one of those that Delhi just knocked it off so easily.
It just gets that whole first innings gets swept under the carpet, doesn't it? When you get 166, and they're probably thinking, well, it's competitive, and then they get it as easy as they did. Rahul was injured as well, so I doubt things would have got better for Punjab Kings. And I think I mentioned Milan at four last pod, and I got laughed out of the room. And looking at it now on paper without Rahul in there, it looks terrible. It looks really quite bad.
I think I called it out as the worst shout that's ever been made on this podcast, because it was add another batsman who goes around a ball for 20 balls, and it's exactly what he did. I was annoyed at the innings that he did that, but I was also quite happy because it had, you know, he batted at four and did exactly
everything we said. And we had that T20 pod, which if you are a first time listener, I would recommend listening to, where we dropped Dawid Malan. We're talking about England T20 team. We finally got rid of him. And again, just watch that innings. You don't need to listen to any other podcast. And that's telling me, and I think we've already mentioned Moeen, but Moeen had a fantastic IPL. And I'm so caught on what we do with him. Again, we'll go England-centric for a minute, because you take him out of an England shirt and put anything else on him, whether it be a Worcestershire Pears shirt or a CSK yellow top. And he is wonderful. And he picks the bat up the right way and lands the ball on a length. Pop an England shirt, though, you know, he's holding the bat wrong, he's bowling with his left hand, it just all goes a little bit wrong. So I know you want to bring him in, Zach, and I want to, but I'm not going to say it just yet, because I just don't believe in Moeen in an England shirt anymore.
Yeah, I think that's fair enough, and I I didn't before this IPL, and I think it took one game of him doing okay, and I was like, oh my God, it's a
one six. One game, it took 1-6, and you were like, right, we're in.
I think that's part of the craze with Moeen, isn't it? Is you watch him do well, and you're like, oh my God, because he's such a good player to watch when he's doing well.
Without a doubt.
That you know, the appeal of it, it's, and I am a sucker for a spinning all-rounder. So, you know, and you watch him spin and it's kind of like, okay. And then you watch him smack sixes and you're like, oh my God, he's basically just the perfect player if he could do it more often, really.
Yeah, and I would never deny that. I love watching Moeen in full flow. I think any cricket fan does. I think he's given himself enough, though. It was a genuinely impressive IPL. In at 3, bowling when left-handers were in, a couple of overs at most.
My problem is, though, Dan, is that do England then bat him at 7 again, which didn't
They
work.
Would, wouldn't they? England would pick him and bat him at 7, which is pointless. And then you bat him at 7 and don't bowl him, or he loses a bit of confidence, or you bowl him from one over, and the whole thing's pointless. If he does come back in, he has to be at 3. Has to be at 3.
I agree.
Okay,
which,
good.
You know, is another person to come into England's top 3 in T20.
No, it's not, because we've binned off Milan, especially after that knock. Let's talk about a team I think will be very glad that the IPL is postponed indefinitely, or ended totally, depending on how you want to see it. Sunrisers, who just had a miserable tournament from start to end, didn't they? The big news coming into their game against Rajasthan was the captaincy change, dropping David Warner as captain and then resting him from the team. That looked like it might have been a permanent drop, or at least for a decent amount of games from what Trevor Bayliss said during the game. Kane Williamson in as captain. I think Naby came in as the overseas and did terribly, even though we called for him last year, Zach. Well, you called for him. Actually, I'm gonna palm that one over to you very quickly. But they got battered by Rajasthan thanks to Joss Butler. But we'll come to Joss in a minute. But SRH, what went wrong? And what did you reckon to the captaincy switch?
I mean, first of all, I'd like to say that after calling for Naby, I did then call for Holder, and Holder was actually instrumental in them getting to the playoffs. So I might have called for Naby. I think we were just basically telling them, stop it with the 3 overseas top order players, play someone else. And they finally did, and it worked out really well for them. Yeah, I really enjoyed the, there was some analysis that happened after their innings against CSK that was David Warner's frustration, because he hit 57 from 55.
He was so bad.
I don't think I've ever seen someone like try and hit the ball as much as he was trying to hit the ball and fail.
I honestly thought he was getting so angry at one point. I think he must have been in the 30s or 40s. He was just going to leave a straight one. Just give it the big Steve Smith leave to a full Yorker. Bat under the armpit and just walk off, because he was going absolutely nowhere. And then you think about the super over that he was part of. He was doing terribly as well. I think he was just horribly, horribly out of nick. And they had to make quite a big decision there.
Yeah, I think he'll be upset that the cancellation didn't happen a game earlier.
Yeah, definitely.
Then he could have avoided the embarrassment of being dropped. But it might, you know, also the fact that this tournament hasn't gone on and he's not been, you know, sacked from the captaincy, sacked from playing, it will mean that it kind of gets brushed under the carpet a bit, doesn't it? The fact he's...
It will. I think it will. And he was on the sideline doing drinks and that. Did you watch the game? He was like a terrier. He was so keen. He wanted to really get stuck in. I think he wanted to kind of show that he's like, you know, I'm a team guy, you know, I'm still involved. And I was like, okay, mate, yeah, cool, we get it.
Yeah, I felt like he was more involved in the game than he had been when he was playing. Yeah. You've said Mohammed Naby did well. Mohammed Naby finished with a strike rate of 340 and hit 17 from 5 balls, which
you see his bowling figures.
Really
quickly. He was okay. Maybe this wasn't his fault, and Williamson was waiting for one of Butler or Sampson to get out, so Naby could come on bowl to a left-hander, and then they didn't get out, and he had to bowl Naby because he needed his fifth bowler for a couple, and he bowled half trackers to a very well set Joss Butler. So, you know, the half tracker thing was his fault, and I think maybe he shouldn't have come on to bowl at that period of time, but. Yeah, I didn't. Fair enough with the batting. I'm sorry, Mohammed. I've mugged you off there slightly.
One interesting thing is though that this innings, looking at the bowling card for SRH shows exactly why SRH aren't very good, because Rashid Khan still only went for 24 from his four, but every other bowler just went for millions, which has been their problem for years.
Well, their other bowlers just give me no life. They give me no energy whatsoever. They make me less interested in cricket. And even Bhuvaneshwar, who I'll count out of that group, went for 37 of his four overs. He didn't seem to have the control or whatever he had over the England batsmen during that series, he did not have. And in our preview pod, we kind of suggested that him and Rashid working well together were the key to this side getting in the top four, which I think we all, you know, at least gave him the chance to get in the top four. And the fact he wasn't firing meant they had four good overs, basically.
Yeah, I mean, I put Boofy down as my purple cap winner. I thought he was going to, you know, after being injured last year and the struggles and how good he was in that series against England. I don't know if it's, like you say, he just didn't have the control. He didn't have the control. Like he couldn't find his length. In the England, he was metronomic with his line and lengths in that England series. And it meant when the ball was doing a bit, he was lethal. And when it wasn't, he wasn't going for many. And he's just lost it. And he's been the biggest disappointment of the season, I think.
100%.
Because, like you say, we were really hopeful and thought, you know, Bairstow was in a good bit of nick going into it. They'd shown some signs last year, and they've kind of, you know, they're a decent side, SRH. They've made the playoffs, I think, the last 2 years in a row now, but have not managed to kind of push on past the kind of, not the semi-final stage, but, you know, the equivalent of the semi-final stage, whatever they call it. But this year you thought, with Bhuvi in the nick he's in, it could be the extra thing to, you know, maybe not win it, but get them to the final maybe or something. But
yeah.
So disappointing.
He seemed like that last piece, didn't he? He seemed like the last piece in exactly what you said, what was a handy team last year. So Shane Will's not here to chat about Rajasthan's. Well, you know, we kind of bitched about them for the whole thing, but they were well in it prior to the suspension. Won three, lost four. You know, absolutely within that sort of mix of teams who were fighting for that third and fourth spot. Let's chat about Butler's innings for a little bit. 50 off 39 balls, I believe he reached. And then he finished on 124 from 64 deliveries. And they were saying on commentary, to be fair, that this up until the end, he was still on about 80. And they were saying this probably isn't his most fluent innings, which definitely wasn't. And then he just went off. And this is the reason Josh Butler needs to open T20 cricket. Because if you can get him 64 balls, most of the time he'll strike at, you know, 175 plus, which he did in this innings. It was stunning. It was good to see. And a shame for him that the tournament got suspended, because I think he might be finding a bit of form.
Yeah, it's a shame for him, and it's a shame for England, because we needed him to kind of have a good run opening or not open. They needed kind of that set.
Correct.
I feel like there's still question marks about his best position in England side, and if he could have taken this and, you know, not necessarily scored another century, because that's his first ever T20 100, so he's now drawn level with Alistair Cook.
Yeah,
in that sense. I don't know if you've seen that on Twitter.
That was quite funny, wasn't it? When did Cook get it? Was he playing for Essex or was he playing for England?
It must have been for Essex, because otherwise he would be in that
Listen, we'll get Will on next week to have a little chat about what he thought about Rajasthan, because I thought they were looking okay again. Again, they weren't going to go and finish top, were they? But I think with seven games played, they were well in for a top four shout when it looked like they could have been, especially after the first couple of games, pretty well stranded. So, you know, good for them. And do you want to chat about KKR, Zach, as we wrap this up? Because they were just pretty average to watch again, weren't they? There didn't seem any distinction from 2020 KKR to 2021 KKR. And they were going to finish fourth or fifth, weren't they? Probably. Maybe sixth.
I mean, last two seasons in a row, they finished fifth on net run rate. And it's made it kind of feel like they've been you know, unlucky to not get in the playoffs. But both times, they've not deserved really to get into the playoffs. They've been pretty lucky to get to where they are. And they've just... you know, it's the one reason I'm glad the tournament's over is I don't have to watch KKR anymore, because they were just painful. I've just written here, Narine is shit. And Sunil Narine, he is. He's just not very good.
His bang is so bad now. Do you remember when he was good for a bit? He was like his pinch hit at the top. He looks awful now.
It was revolutionary. It was like, I mean, I'm not going to lie, as I said before about Moeen Ali, sucker for a spinning all-rounder. He epitomised it. You know, he could hit big, but basically everyone just discovered that he's not good against fast bowling at the start of his innings. So just bowl pace to him and he can't deal with it.
Like round his hip and he can't do anything. He's absolutely useless. Yeah, they were really, whenever I check the TV listings, what IPL game was on in the day, I'd be like, please don't be KKR. I couldn't handle them, man. And they'd get like 160 or something. And you'd be like, okay. And then they'd bowl terribly. It never worked for them. They played 7-1-2, lost 5. They were looking, starting to get a little bit stranded over there, actually, them and SRH.
Well, I think the thing is with us mentioning Rajasamrin with a shout, because if you look at the rest of the teams, SRH and KKR, definitely worse than them. Punjab Kings probably worse than them. And then, you know, that puts Rajasthan fifth, and they're within a sniff of the top four. That, you know, they're close in points, and they're, you know, a couple of close games, and it can change everything, you know, and it can be down to net run rate, which they would have done really well on in that, you know, 220 innings against SRH. So, yeah, KKR were not looking good this year. And it was annoyingly, Dre Ross has finally found some form, he was doing a little bit of what he did in 2019, which was just unbelievable hitting that kind of dragged KKR close in a few games. In 2019, it took them over the line, and it kind of could have looked better than it was again, like it did last year. There was a couple of games where they kind of won when they didn't deserve to win. There's some serious issues there, and there's just, you know, they don't have, they're not good enough. Their batters aren't good enough. Their bowlers aren't good enough. And not playing Lockie Ferguson after how good he was in those few games played last year is terrible. I think they need to first get rid of Pat Cummins, because he's one of those players who's cost them so much they have to play him every game. And Lockie Ferguson is better than Pat Cummins in T20 cricket. Obviously, and Kevin Peterson and co kept saying this on commentary, oh, but he's the best player in the world in Test cricket, which is, you know,
very different game.
It's a very different game. So, you know, it's not the same. And I understand they're going to, you know, if they're going to have Pat Cummins, they should be opening the bowling with him, which I do agree with, but they should just play Lockie Ferguson, who's better in this format.
It would have solved so much. And I saw there was I could see this season falling away from KKR because McCullum was coming out into the press, getting a little bit frustrated. I don't know about what, because he's the coach, but he was just sort of suggesting we need to make changes. Something's got to happen here. Maybe pointing upstairs at the top of the franchise with the players he could choose from. But then you also had probably him battling against Owen Morgan, who likes to stay loyal to his players and pick the same team over and over again, as he's done for England, just to back them, basically, and let them do their thing, which they just weren't doing, basically. So, yeah, again, for SRH and KKR, probably a good thing the season ended so early. And I'll tell you what, Zach, it's just a shame. I've enjoyed chatting about the cricket there. And it was all so nicely poised, wasn't it? We were 7-8, some teams played 8 games. And there's some really good cricket being played. And, you know, probably 6 teams all fighting out for those top 4 spots. And it's a shame it's over, really. But, you know, we've had some fun along the way, haven't we?
We have, yeah. And you're right. Like, we're probably about the halfway mark now if teams have played 7 and 8 games. And, you know, it was kind of building up again, like Mumbai Indians, who we haven't really spoken about today, but, you know, we often don't really speak about them because they're so good. But this season, they've kind of been a bit meh. And they looked like they kind of refound something in the last week. And it was kind of going to be like, oh, are they back? Or, you know, were they back for that briefly bit? They kind of won, you know, they won those 2 games. We spoke about them with the Kieran Pollard innings, I suppose, didn't we? But, it was kind of going to be kind of coming into something interesting again. Like the first few games is always a bit tough to know who's good. Even though teams might be winning games, it's still, you know, RCB won a few games, but it was a bit like, are they good? And we were saying this about CSK. Are they good?
Yeah.
This end of the season is when we were about to find out who the kind of decent teams were. And it looked like MI were again putting in the kind of run they always put in, and they end up in the top two, and then they win. It's kind of what they do.
The IPL's just got it flows in that way, doesn't it? I love the start of the season when, as you said, a team could win 2 in a row, but you're like, they still could be banned because it's a T20 game, and they're all good enough cricketers to win a T20 game, so you don't quite know yet. And we were just getting to that point. I love the way an IPL season finishes, and it crescendos in that often crazy way. Less so last year because the top three were confirmed pretty quickly, but often for that fourth spot, it's so much fun.
Oh, and there's always the team like CSK last year, and who were cut adrift and couldn't make it, but then they just
start
ruining everyone else's chances.
That was SRH's role this year, wasn't it? You know, after 10 games, they'd be like 1-2, lost 8, and they'd be like, right, okay, they'd make a key change somewhere. I don't know what they'd have done. Jason Roy would have come in and they'd have gone and won the last five or something daft. I don't know. But yeah, unfortunately, we'll miss out on that this year. Hopefully all the players get back to their respective families safely. You know, at this stage, the cricket really doesn't matter, does it? Although it was fun to talk about. That'll about wrap it up for this week. I don't know what we'll have next week, Zach. We'll have something for you guys. We got to get Will on chat about Rajasthan and see what he thought about the IPL. And there'll be some televised county cricket to chat about. So maybe we'll have a little just general cricketing chinwag for a little bit. And more importantly, are you playing cricket this weekend? Weather depending, because the weather's been diabolical in the UK, for those who don't know.
Well, the weather looks awful for Saturday.
So that is a write-off. So. You've got absolutely no chance. I've got a tea time on Saturday. No chance on playing that.
Yeah, no. So I think probably not this week.
Alas, alas. Listen, tune in next week anyway. There'll be some kind of story to be had. Thank you very much for listening. Zach, thank you very much.
Thank you, Dan.
And we'll see you next week.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Save big on brunch for mom, all in the Kroger app. Get half gallons of delicious Kroger milk for $1.29 each. Then get flavorful Tyson Natural Boneless Chicken Breasts for $2.49 a pound, all with your card and a digital coupon. Shop these deals at your local Kroger today. Or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.